I have gone through this loop hundreds of times. My life, which once seemed like an organic movement, now has become a hideous script that I must play out, with an ending that is forever forestalled. I won't ever die, but I won't ever live. Please help. And then, weeping, she touched the flamingo again. There have also been some complaints that the plastic on the flamingos is cheaply produced and warped. Has Lenny's Bargain House been selling us substandard and possibly time-bending decorative birds? We will investigate at some point in the future, when we feel like we are maybe more interested than we are now. Until then, we will continue on in ignorance, happy as we ever were. And now we are pleased to present 3 commercial-free hours of advertisements. 28. They ran past the nonfiction shelves, filled with informative books on every subject not currently outlawed by city government, or the sheriff's secret police, or the world government. The shelves were mostly empty. They tried to keep their footfalls as soft as possible. In Jackie's case, this resulted in only her usual heavy-heeled thuds. Gently, silence over speed, Diane thought, glaring at the teenager's back but not wanting to say it out loud. Hurry the hell up, Jackie thought, as Diane lagged behind. After nonfiction was science fiction. No one knows why science fiction is kept separately from the rest of nonfiction. Tradition is a powerful thing. These shelves were much less censored than the main nonfiction section, since science fiction tended to be about day-to-day stuff that everyone already knew. They hid against the long rows of novels, most titles unreadable under a gnashing of teeth and claw marks. Diane looked up to see a shelf full of Ursula K. Le Guin books, streaked with 4 long brownish stains. Poor book lover, Diane thought, dragged away just as they found that perfect read. Jackie smelled something. It was different than the usual library smell of basement closets and bleach. This smelled like burnt coffee during a sinus infection. A stale sting in her nose. She turned to Diane, whose eyes were pointed down, cheeks flushed, nostrils flared. You smell it too? Diane nodded, putting her finger to her lips. A distant hum. They looked around. Diane took Jackie's hand. Jackie didn't notice. The distant hum was perhaps a nearby growl. Keep moving, Jackie said. Diane did nothing. Jackie stood, pulled her up by the hand. The noise was between distant and nearby. It was between a growl and a hum. Hiding won't make whatever that was go away, Jackie said. Diane clutched at the science fiction shelf as Jackie led her, heel-toe, quiet, into the biography section. The section was extensive, taking up most of the wall leading to the back of the library. The only book in the section was the official biography of Helen Hunt. There were a lot of copies. It was a well-stocked biography section. If anyone needed to know about the life of a person, for instance, Helen Hunt, then this section was extremely helpful. A few turned-out copies of the book revealed a smiling Helen Hunt on its cover. Helen's eyes stared back directly at the viewer. Helen's smile had a hard edge, a tight anger to it. Her hair was pulled back to display the intricate clover-shaped forehead tattoos that Helen Hunt is known for. Between the actor's teeth, Diane could see a gray smudge in the famous dark of that famous maw. The gray seemed to move, to flicker. It was pacing to and fro. Jackie saw it too. A bright glint, like a cat's eye in a dark room, flashed out from between the award-winning actor's teeth. Jackie put one hand to her own mouth and tried not to breathe. Diane pulled herself close to Jackie's shoulder. Helen wasn't smiling at all. They must have seen it wrong. She was frowning, angry, still showing all of her teeth. Or no, the woman on the book covers was definitely moving. Her mouth was opening, and the gray movement inside became fast and agitated. Diane gave a light shove, and they ran out of the biography section before Helen could do anything more. Now they were deep in the fiction section, surrounded by books that told nothing but lies. They breathed heavily from their run, but tried to keep their breathing as quiet as they could. They could not keep it very quiet at all. From one of the shelves, an arm reached out to them. It appeared to be more or less human. Diane made a sound that was not quite but similar to a scream. Jackie stopped, turned, and put her hand over Diane's mouth.
"Librarian,"
Diane said into Jackie's palm. The human arm was connected to a figure that was leaking out of the wall, with wet skin and sandpaper eyes and a body that shimmered variations on the human form. Diane sank into Jackie's body in terror, feeling a moment where she just gave up. Jackie held her up, eyes steady on the figure.
"Too human to be a librarian," Jackie whispered. "I think that's just the specter that haunts the biography section. It's harmless."
The bit at the end of the specter's arm that wasn't quite a hand reached out toward them. Its body dripped out of the wall like oil, black and viscous.
"Are you sure?"
Diane said. The figure hovered closer. Its face was cratered and oozing, its eyes rough and gray. She pushed back into Jackie, unable to help herself.
"Oh, you know what?" Jackie said. "The specter regularly takes people. It's taken a ton of people. Presumably, they're all dead. We should go."
She took Diane's arm and moved her down the aisle toward the creature. A cleft opened below the thing's eyes, splitting into a distorted mouth stuck in the shape of a final mortal scream. Diane tried to lead Jackie into another run, but Jackie kept the pace, even and slow. The creature loomed, and Jackie leaned out an elbow, pushing it sharply aside. They tumbled forward into, through, and beyond the specter. Diane turned to see if the specter had followed. It was gone.
"That wasn't funny," she said.
"It was kind of funny."
Jackie considered Diane's face.
"Oh, come on, dude. It's not like knowing would have helped you any. I've had to do school reports on Helen Hunt enough times that I've learned to deal with the specter. Its intentions aren't good, sure, but it's too slow and weak to be much of a problem."
Diane glared at Jackie, with irritation, but also with a new respect. Jackie was braver than she, Diane knew, suddenly and solidly, as much as she had ever known any fact in her life. And while, as the older person, she was more responsible, still, Jackie was capable in ways that Diane was not. She didn't know what to do with that information, but she knew it. They had made it past the books, past the ghost, to a beige metal shelf, bolted to the wall. A few dozen books and folders on it. There was a stepladder available for the convenience of shorter patrons, or those seeking information from the top shelf. Handwritten on a piece of paper taped to the shelf was a note. "Forbidden material shelf."
"According to the index, should be here."
"Probably it's that," Diane said, pointing. On the shelf, between a teach-yourself calligraphy book, the powers that be worried it would serve as a gateway to pen ownership, and a 1988 calendar called Mountains of Our World, was a shoebox marked King City.
"That's probably it. Yes, I agree."
Jackie grabbed it,
Cool. Well, this has been fun, but let's go, Jackie said.
They turned toward the exit, but didn't move. The distant hum had returned. Between them and the exit was the fiction section, and inside the fiction section was the noise. A gurgling, like a person trying to breathe with severe lung trouble, and a clicking, like bad joints moving in old bodies. A growl and a hum, threatening crying and angry laughter. All sounds happened at once, coming from the one huge form, a shadow defining its way into the light. Tendrils whipped in and out between the books. The smell of burnt coffee was overwhelming.
"Is that?" Jackie asked, and a ropey white limb wrapped around her neck.
Jackie had no air to register her distress, so she widened her eyes and heaved back and forth. The limb was glistening, and whatever sticky substance was all over it stung her skin. She started to go pale. Her head seemed to be miles above her body. She saw shapes and colors, but couldn't be sure if that was still the world or only the inside of her head. Diane froze. She had never physically fought off even a human being. She had never been attacked. Even in the hypothetical imagining of being attacked, even just by a human, she imagined failing to defend herself. Jackie was braver than Diane, but if she didn't do anything, Jackie was about to die. That was it, really. She was about to die, and Diane was doing nothing, was too scared. Jackie dropped the King City box and held out her arms as she was pulled toward the shadows. She reached for anything that might slow her journey backwards. The librarian made a gurgling howl, and there were matching howls from all over the library. Soon, there would be more of them. Diane looked around desperately, but all that surrounded her were books. Useless books. She looked down into Troy's file cradled in her arms. There. The rock that had reminded someone of Troy. One edge of it had eroded into jagged sharpness. She pulled it out and stabbed it into the ropey limb that was dragging Jackie away from her. The limb slackened. Diane stepped forward against every instinct and shoved her arm between it and Jackie's neck. She pulled as hard as she could, and Jackie wriggled frantically. It seemed that even with Diane pulling, the gap was not nearly big enough for Jackie to escape. But the limb was so slimy with its toxic substance, now burning through Diane's jacket, that Jackie was able to slip her head out. They stumbled backwards. Jackie's neck and face were a mess of purple blotches, and she was sweating hard through her clothes. Still, she remembered to scoop the King City box back off the floor. Diane took off her rapidly dissolving jacket and tossed it to the ground. The librarian's limb recoiled, curled back into the massive body, then shot out at them again. As they ducked and ran down a parallel aisle, Diane saw through the gaps between the books the librarian emerge from the shadows. She saw exactly and in full what a librarian looked like. Her stomach lurched. She would not forget the sight, recurring in dreams and panic attacks until the moment she died, at which point she would forget it. Eventually, on the day she finally died, one of the things that ran through her mind was, "Well, at least I won't have to remember that anymore." It made her happy, and she died smiling. But that was much later. Jackie did her best to keep up with Diane. She was younger and faster, but the poison was coursing through her. Her gait was unsteady, and she hissed hard through clenched teeth. They tore through the fiction section and into biographies. Helen Hunt's face was completely gone, replaced by a gaping mouth, distended from chin to hairline, a buzz of gray rushing at them from its depths. Then the shelves ran out, and there was only space. Ahead was the wide open reading room, a death trap. The moment they stepped out into that,
Every librarian would see them, and then it would be over. They turned to look, and that white, ropey limb was hissing toward them, leaving a thick, oily trail on the carpet. They looked at each other. Jackie leaned on Diane's arm, struggling a bit now with standing up.
"We can do this," Jackie said. "Just move before you can think about consequences."
Diane nodded, and they ran as thoughtlessly as they could manage into the reading area. There was a bellow from all around them, and more of the white limbs seethed out of the floor and the shelves. Bulbous shapes loomed at them from the ceiling. The librarians had all come out to greet them. The skittering of hundreds of spindly legs, a buzzing, red eyes maybe, or red spots, or blood squirted into the air. There were primary jaws and secondary jaws and tertiary vestigial jaws, and each of them turned to two women running toward the exit. They couldn't run straight because of the broken fountain, and so they curved around it. Jackie, even with her body weakening, had found a reckless energy inside and was running faster. Diane was gasping and slowing, cursing years of intended workouts that had never happened. The younger woman took her by the shoulders and pushed her ahead. They became a four-legged animal of escape. Fangs and stingers and those boneless white limbs slapped the tile of the fountain just behind them. There was buzzing all around. To the left was the reference section. Jackie didn't look, but she could hear whatever had been in the shadows rushing out at them. Then the checkout area. The return slot's lid was lifting up, a tentacle-like tongue, or tongue-like tentacle glopping out of it like sludge. There was a roaring, incoherent voice. It sounded like the entire building, the walls and floors and metal skeleton of its structure telling them they would die. Diane watched the front doors of the library approach, and the boneless limbs of the librarians worked their way in and through the handles, shutting the doors with their bodies. They weren't going to make it.
"We're not going to make it," Diane said.
"We'll make it." Jackie turned her shoulder forward, putting her entire flung weight into the glass doors and the poisonous limbs. Broken glass and toxic librarian blood spat out onto the tiles of the entrance corridor. Jackie landed in a pile of the glass and a puddle of the gray ooze. Diane ran through the resulting hole and scooped Jackie up. She was so light, really. They were out of the foyer, out into the empty parking lot. The building behind them expanded, and then came back together with a humph. They turned, but nothing was pursuing them. The front doors were unbroken, and there was no sign of any creatures. It was quiet, and waiting once again. Jackie gasped as much air as she could into her throbbing lungs. Her legs were shaking, but she was standing.
"I said we would make it. Who was right?"
Jackie said at the ground, bent in two.
"Who was right? Are you okay? Do you have any glass in you?"
"A little bit, man, but I'm okay."
Diane smiled at Jackie. After a moment, Jackie smiled back. Then they started laughing. They couldn't stop. They stood and leaned into each other and laughed. Jackie was still covered in purple blotches and pouring sweat, but they laughed about that too.
"You were right," said Diane. "You were right. Oh my God, we're actually alive, aren't we?"
Jackie waved it off.
"More important, we have answers."
Jackie nodded to the box in her hand and the folder in Diane's.
"I mean, God, I hope we have answers."
Diane nodded and sighed. The sigh held neither despair nor relief, only air.
"Guess back to dealing with this mess now."
"Guess so," Jackie said. Jackie looked at her car, and Diane looked at the sidewalk, and they both almost walked away.
"Hey," said Diane,
Do you want to look at this stuff together? Just see if there's anything we can both learn from it?
Yeah, sure, said Jackie, still looking at her car. That'd be cool, I guess.
Diane put her arm around Jackie's shoulder to help her to the car. But her energy was almost gone in the panic of having nearly orphaned Josh. So Jackie put an arm around Diane. Limping, but moving, they carried one another away from the library.
29. The shoebox marked King City had a book and a small stack of newspaper articles. The book was called Fun Facts and Anecdotes Related to King City and Environs. It was written by noted actor and civic historian Harrison Ford. It was cheaply made, and even a skim of its contents indicated a lack of careful copy editing and layout in its production. Jackie flipped open to somewhere in the middle. King City Fact number 1061. Did you know King City is the only city in California to have had a mayor right from its very founding? It has never gone a second without a mayor. It has always had one. Again. King City Fact number 702. The fad of playing Dark Side of the Moon over Wizard of Oz was popularized by King City's own George Taylor Morris. Again. King City Fact number 986. We have the most oranges. What the hell? She said, flipping faster through the useless book. I almost died for this? King City Fact number 3. No animals were harmed. She tossed the useless book on the car floor and picked up the stack of newspaper articles. King City reports serious trouble with concepts of existence. Loss. January 23, 2003. By Leanne Hart, Senior Life and Style Reporter. A city in Central California with no apparent connections to our town of Nightvale or the vast flat desert in which we reside is reporting trouble with ideas like existence and loss. They are reporting that reality isn't what it used to be, and that life seems somehow empty, or that it always was, and they just never noticed. In a press release sent only to Nightvale, for reasons we do not understand, King City indicated that it feels out of sync with cities only a few miles away, and that perhaps everyone they know are just variations on the same single person. Everyone is one person, says King City. There are a lot of that person. Also, they need to elect a mayor. They haven't had a mayor in so long. It's time to elect a mayor, they said. The local paper, the King City Rustler, has been printing large glossy photos of some man in a tan jacket holding a deerskin suitcase. They have not been printing anything else. No one knows who he is, and no one can remember the photos after they look at them. These glossy color photos seem expensive to print. This is a waste of the newspaper's funds, everyone thought, but no one said. When reached for comment by an angry mob of King City citizens bearing torches, the editor of the Rustler hid. Those outside of King City are saying that it is getting harder and harder to find the town, like it is slowly sliding off the map. Roads that used to go into town do not go into town anymore, and those attempting to reach town simply disappear. I'm pretty sure we didn't used to disappear in King City, said Wanda Nieves, a local resident who issued her own press release, consisting only of that quote. We at the Nightvale Daily Journal are using the massive amounts of funds gained in the ever-lucrative newspaper business to investigate why people from King City are sending us annoying press releases, and also, if it comes up, why King City is slipping out of our reality under the watchful eyes of a mysterious man in a tan jacket.
As always, this article contains additional reporting by agents of various unnamed government agencies who add and subtract words and sentences from newspaper articles in order to send coded messages to compatriots living deep undercover in distant parts of the world. Directly after that was another article, with the same layout and the same photo illustration, a self-shot portrait of Leanne Hart that she was apparently quite pleased with, and so had for much of 2003 to 2004 used as illustration for most of her feature stories. King City totally fine and basically not that interesting. January 23, 2003, by Leanne Hart, senior political reporter. A city in central California with no apparent connections to our town of Night Vale or the vast flat desert in which we reside is totally fine. It has a population of about a brown smudge and an unemployment rate of scribbled out with pencil. The sun shines there much as it does here. Sometimes the sun does not shine and people there refer to this as night. In this respect, and in all others, it is totally normal. We at the Daily Journal are not clear why we are reporting on this story, as the fact that King City exists is not in and of itself an interesting fact. If truth be told, and it often shouldn't be, the town itself is not interesting. Good mayor. Citizens of King City, when asked via phone, wanted first to know who was calling. Oh, I'm a reporter, I said. I was just checking to see if you had anything to say. Huh? Said the citizens. Okay, like, are you asking about something specific? No. I don't even know what the story is here. Maybe if you started talking, we'd be able to figure that out together. Most people don't ask me to talk about anything, said the citizens. Well, I guess my job isn't fulfilling, but I'm not unhappy about it. I never expected my job to be fulfilling. We're told so often that employment won't be fulfilling and that the surprise would be if it suddenly turned out to be. I'm not happy about it, but I'm okay with it. That wasn't interesting at all, I said. I'm sorry. Me too. The citizens of King City may have commented further. I hung up, so I don't know. I'm not sure what this information does for you exactly, but just know that King City, a city in Monterey County, north of Mexico, south of Oregon, underneath the sky, over a lot of dirt, and then over a different part of the sky, is doing totally fine. Nothing more to report. It's been a slow day here. As always, this article contains additional reporting by agents of various unnamed government agencies who have murdered an innocent man they did not know just so that one of their fellow agents, out of contact but with access to a newspaper, will read the man's name and realize that the name of the murdered man is itself the message. Jackie held up the two stories. They were identical in every way, except the reality they were reporting on. This is not encouraging at all, said Diane. Dude! Jackie meant a lot by that, but she had no other way to say it. And this doesn't help, Diane said, holding up the photo from Troy's file. Nope, makes everything worse. I don't see another car. You need a ride? Yes, please. I walked here. I needed to get my blood pumping for a library trip, but I think I've had enough for today. Yeah, said Jackie. She found there was nothing to add to that, no modifiers or scorn or jokes, so she just said it again. Yeah. Diane studied the photo as Jackie started her car. Every time she looked at it, she could feel her head start to throb. Maybe she did have migraines. Can you develop migraines later in life? She asked. Why the hell do people keep talking to me about migraines? You too? They shared a confused glance. Fine, I don't care. I don't need another stupid mystery to solve, said Jackie. The photo in Diane's hand was old, yellowing and cracked, and bending at the edges. In it, there was a man who was definitely Troy. He could not have been anyone else. He had his arm around a little girl. They were posed in the middle of downtown Night Vale,
but a downtown that had not existed for probably more than 100 years. Diane studied the face, blandly handsome, smiling blandly. Definitely Troy.
Maybe we should talk to Leanne Hart, Jackie said.
Yeah. There was a lot she could add to that, but she didn't have the energy, so Diane just said it again.
Yeah.
She thought she might throw up. If not right then, later. At some point in her life she would. It was a statistical thing.
30. Diane and Jackie quietly read the clippings on the wall, displayed around a large, well-used hatchet. It was one of the many hatchets Leanne Hart kept as part of her business. It was a failing business, but Leanne kept it alive. The clippings showcased some of Night Vale Daily Journal's most famous headlines. Glow cloud threatens farms, dead animals falling from sky. City Council approves humming, private residences only, max 50 decibels. Everything is fine, totally fine, carry on. Feral dogs actually just plastic bags, says mayor. Scientists announce, relax, sun is not real.
Worms!
All hail the glow cloud. Wheat-free Night Vale, wheat and its byproducts turn into snakes, cause deaths. Street cleaning day, run for your lives, run, run! As editor of the Night Vale Daily Journal for the past 3 decades, Leanne had been present for the steady popularity and then sudden decline of print news. Many of her ideas were cost-effective, cutting back to 4 issues a week. Some seemed like good ideas, but failed for unexpected reasons. Replacing newspapers in street kiosks with 2% milk, which apparently spoils quickly in sunlight. And some were hugely successful, attacking independent news bloggers with hatchets. The last was a controversial decision, as attacking a person with a hatchet, with anything really, is technically a crime. But Leanne made it work by engaging in semiotic arguments with law enforcement about what is assault and what is a business plan. One of her degrees is an MBA, she often told law enforcement officers. Few officers have an MBA, so they rarely argued with her. Leanne's office featured an entire wall of hatchets, held up at angles by screws drilled into the faux wood paneling. Most of them were new and shiny. There were 5 in the center that were old, with curved gray wood handles. Their heads were smaller than those of the other hatchets. They were flinty, dull, with inscriptions depicting each of the 5 W's of journalism.
What?
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 Why?
On another wall were her college diplomas, both of which were handwritten in Cyrillic. Neither could have been her MBA, as since the early 1960s, all MBA degrees have been issued via subdermal microchip. Having read everything on the wall twice over, Jackie broke the silence.
Let me do the talking, okay?
That's fine, Diane said.
I mean, you can if you want to.
No, really, you do it.
You obviously want... Hello.
This last was from Leanne, who had entered the room with her hatchet. Her voice sounded distant, like she was still in the other room even as she sat on the couch underneath the wall of hatchets, and gestured for the two of them to sit across from her in the smooth white chairs. Were those ivory? Unlikely, especially since ivory had been outlawed, and even living elephants had had their tusks confiscated by strict regulators. The chairs were tall and rigid, with thin seat pads, but were surprisingly comfortable. Diane and Jackie did their best not to move around much in them. Definitely not ivory. Perhaps some kind of bone? The knots where the legs met seemed almost like joints.
Well?
Said Leanne. Her voice sounded even farther away, like she was shouting from down a long corridor. Diane looked at Jackie, who was looking at Diane. Go ahead, Diane said, and Jackie laid out the two news articles about King City. Hi, Leanne. I'm Jackie, and this is Diane Leanne snatched the articles from the table and held them to the light.
Where did you get these?
The library. Leanne widened her eyes, then mouthed, Library. It was not clear whether she was impressed or skeptical.
King City, huh?
She said.
Quiet town, suburban without the urban, not much to say about it.
She set the articles down on the coffee table. Jackie opened her mouth, but Diane spoke first. But what about this other article? Which article is telling the truth? Jackie closed her mouth and looked at Diane.
A good journalist doesn't have to discuss the truth,
said Leanne, waving toward her diplomas.
Some details are secret or off the record.
What? Said Jackie. So what stuck out to you about this mayor? Diane said. You don't mention his name in either article. You just say, good mayor. You wrote that here as an entire paragraph. Good mayor.
Well, they have a good mayor,
said Leanne. But, said Jackie. Hang on, Jackie, Diane said. Leanne, we need any information you have. This is important.
And why is this so important?
Said Leanne, testing the edge of the hatchet against her finger. It drew a dot of blood, and she smiled. I don't know who I am, and I don't understand the progression of time as it relates to me, said Jackie. Leanne nodded.
We've all been there.
I lost my job, said Diane. I've distanced myself from my son. I'm teetering. I feel like the breath before a scream.
Listen to me, young ladies.
Young ladies, Diane mouthed, but did not interrupt.
Good reporting is not wasting words or space. I can't afford the column inches to describe every insignificant detail about a story or all the information that might be pertinent.
But what about, said Jackie, but Diane spoke over her. We'll make this simple. Which of those two stories is true? Which one can we trust? Leanne thought about this.
I don't know. Or I don't remember. Or a journalist never reveals her secrets.
That's a magician, Jackie said. A magician never reveals her secrets.
Isn't a journalist a type of magician?
Said Leanne, lifting one eyebrow. The effect was very irritating.
No, said Jackie. Definitely not. No.
I think what Jackie's trying to say, Leanne, is that...
I'm trying to say this, said Jackie, standing.
She reached over Leanne's shoulder, grabbed the hatchet, the one inscribed with, What? Jackie hefted the hatchet over her head and put her hand down on the table between all of them. Before either of the other women could do anything in response, she swung the hatchet down and chopped the slip of paper in her hand in two. Then up again, this time a series of quick, light hacks, like a chef cutting up a chiffonade. Once the slip was shredded, she swept all the paper off the table, scattering it into the air and onto the thick carpet. Look, Jackie said. She held up the intact piece of paper that said, King City. Now, I need to know everything you know about this place, she said, waving the paper.
How did you do that?
Leanne said. A magician never reveals. Diane had, of course, noticed the piece of paper in Jackie's hand, but this was confounding. She found she had nothing to ask, or she had many things to ask, but no way to voice them. Why didn't you tell me? Was all Diane could say.
There's a lot of us with these papers, said Jackie. Diane, I saw you had one, but I don't know what you did with it.
He wanted me to give it to my son, but I didn't. I threw it away. Or no, I don't remember what I did with it.
Lucky? Jackie dismissed Diane. I keep mine in my hand because it won't leave. Now, Leanne, which of these stories is true? Do you have any idea?
I imagine they both are, said Leanne. I'm imagining that because I don't have any idea.
She narrowed her eyes to better assess Jackie. Definitely impressed this time.
You've obviously been there, said Jackie. You wrote two articles about the place. Can you put us in touch with anyone there? Oh, no. I never actually went there or talked to anyone there. I'm a reporter, not a snoop.
31. Jackie pulled up to the front of Diane's house. She looked down at her hand, which was crumpling up the paper, and then letting it spring open uncreased again and again. The drive had been quiet since she told Diane the story of the paper. I know the man in the tan jacket you're talking about, Diane broke the silence. His name is Evan.
If you say so, I don't remember the name he gave me. Ephraim, maybe?
I used to work with him, I think. But I'm starting to feel that what we think may not be the most reliable test of truth.
John Peters, you know, the farmer, he told me that you were involved with the man in the tan jacket.
John said that?
Well, no, not outright, but he implied it, sure.
Diane shook her head. That man, he always loves to be ahead of the gossip. So much so, I think he makes up half of it.
All of these men, said Jackie. Each one carrying a mystery that's not as interesting as he thinks. I don't want their mysteries. I want a life on an even level.
Diane nodded. Jackie's exhaustion was also her own.
Or maybe I want to grow older, Jackie said. Maybe that is what I want, but I want to do it because I'm ready, not because someone else is ready for me.
She found that when she looked at Diane now, she saw a woman who, yes, happened to be older than her, but yes, also had her own worries, her own worrying lot in life. Jackie softened her voice.
Who are we following, Diane? Who's the blonde man at the diner? And at the bank, and the movie theater, and who knows where else?
He's a police officer, too, said Diane. It's amazing how much a roll of dimes weighs, the house thought.
So? Who is he?
Josh's father. Left town when Josh was born.
Asshole.
Diane smiled. She hadn't talked about Troy leaving since shortly after it happened. He'd always felt somehow like a mistake she had made, an embarrassing moment for her. Jackie's response was honest and simple, and in just two syllables put all the onus on Troy. After all the back and forth with Josh, the weird business at work, it felt good to have a person on her side. He showed up again recently. I don't know why he did. I'm worried that he wants back in Josh's life. And of course, Josh is interested in knowing his dad, whatever that word means.
Ah, let him. He'll just find out his dad's a jerk. Like, Troy was cute. You got pregnant. He skipped town. He's an asshole. Josh can figure all that out on his own. He's not much younger than me.
He wasn't. It was true. The limited scale of the human life startled Diane. There was so little actual time between ages that felt vastly different. She had categorized Jackie as different than Josh, and herself as different than Jackie, but the span of years between any two of them wasn't much of a span at all. None of us knows what we want to do when we're his age. When we're your age? When you're my age? Said Diane. Any age, I guess. We think we do, and sometimes we're right, but only ever in retrospect. Her tone was halfway between reminiscence and lecture. Jackie sighed, but let her talk. She knew that messages were for the sender, not the receiver. Troy and I loved each other. We called it unconditional love, which was true. Once conditions arose, the love dissipated.
Everything that's happened has got me thinking about a lot of stuff I tried hard not to think about, like, I've never loved anyone, said Jackie. Not that I can remember. I know this town.
but I don't feel like I'm on the same time scale as it. Something went off.
Love is hard, said Diane, who hadn't really listened to what Jackie had said. I wish Josh could love his father conditionally.
The kid is smart. He'll know what to do.
How old are you, Jackie, if you don't mind?
19, I guess.
You guess?
I don't feel 19.
Jackie looked out the window at the houses across the street that were thinking nothing at all.
A woman who calls herself Mom asked me about stuff from when I was a kid, but I couldn't remember any of it. People think I'm a child, but if so, I've been a child for a long time. I don't know how old I am.
Talking about this made Jackie feel like she was looking down from somewhere high, or like she was staring straight up at a cloudless point of sky.
People look at me and call me a girl, or tell me I'm too young to run a pawn shop. They wonder how I'm able to handle a tough business like that. And I don't know. I just do. Always have. It's the only thing I know how to do. Far as I can tell, I've been doing it for centuries.
Well, when you're 19, everything feels like forever, Diane said, staring at the dash and lightly touching the air conditioning vent. I don't know. Did you ever think of just turning 20?
I gotta go, Jackie said.
Okay.
Meaning, this is my car.
Right. Diane grabbed her belongings. Hey, she said. I said I was going to let you ask the questions at Leanne's, and then I didn't let you. That wasn't right of me.
Guess we all suck sometimes.
Diane and Jackie held a look for a moment, and this changed nothing about how they felt about each other. But there was a kind of simple peace that came from holding a gaze. Diane broke it off and shut the door. As she raised her hand to wave and opened her mouth to say goodbye, Jackie's car drove off. She walked into the house, set her things down, and turned on the radio. Cecil's voice relaxed her. He was announcing some upcoming events in town. There was a new exhibit at the Museum of Forbidden Technologies that sounded interesting. Unfortunately, Diane had never been able to go to the museum because all of its exhibits are classified, and no one is allowed to see them. It is a felony to go to that museum. Diane flipped through the day's mail as Cecil continued on. It didn't matter what he said. The world is terrifying. It always is. But Cecil reminded her that it was okay to relax in a terrifying world. The mail was junk. A couple of furniture catalogs, a credit card offer, a dead mouse, and a flyer with coupons for 50% off the moon. The faceless old woman who secretly lives in her home had censored the credit card offer, using charcoal to blot out entire lines and amounts. Diane looked through the coupons, considering what a great deal it would be if anyone actually wanted the moon. It's a hideous rock, Diane thought. You couldn't pay me to take it. The moon is a trick of light, suggested to us by the seas, the house thought. From the radio, Diane heard the word Chuckwalla. This was the street she lived on. She stopped thinking about the moon and the mail and made her way to the living room. She stared at the radio. In lieu of her ears' inability to open up, she widened her eyes to better hear Cecil's voice. She listened to what he had to say, moving from distant unease to personal unease to panic. There are not a lot of blue Mazda coupes with double red stripes. Diane had just been sitting in one. There are quite a few burgundy Ford hatchbacks. Diane owned one of them. Everything she was afraid of was happening at once. She was only afraid of one thing. No! She shouted. She shouted it over and over because she didn't know what she could do to change anything, and at least shouting made her feel better. No one could hear except the house and the faceless old woman who secretly lives in it. Diane opened the door to her garage. She turned on the light. There was no burgundy Ford hatchback.
God damn it, Josh!
Diane ran to Josh's room, She knocked. She knocked again. She opened his door. He was not there. She worried for Jackie's safety. She seethed over Josh's disobedience. Josh did not answer his phone. Neither did Jackie. The calls went straight to voicemail. Diane texted both of them. No response. She ran out her front door, down Chuckwalla Road, past several crisscrossing streets, toward the crash. Is the roof the head of the house? Or the hair? Or is it a hat? Thought the house. This is just the start of it, whispered the faceless old woman from behind Diane's washing machine. The Voice of Night Vale. Accident at the corner of Lampasas Avenue and Chuckwalla Road. All westbound lanes of Lampasas are shut down and EMTs are at the scene. While there was only one damaged car at the scene, a blue Mazda coupe with double red stripes, which rode up the median and wrecked headlong into a light pole, witnesses described a second car, a burgundy Ford hatchback that had run the Mazda off the road and then sped away. The driver of the Mazda, a woman in her late teens, early 20s, was taken to the hospital. There are no other reported injuries. The Sheriff's Secret Police are suspecting this may have been a hit and run and are asking anyone with information to contact them. They're also using this time to learn a little bit more about three-dimensional chalk art. Several of the officers have already drawn an orca leaping above a frothy ocean wave. The whole thing's like 10 feet wide. It's remarkable because it looks not only photorealistic, but also like the whale is coming right out of the street. Very impressive to have drawn that in the last 15 minutes while also investigating a major accident. Wow. And now, a word from our sponsors. Having trouble sleeping? Are you awake at all hours? Do birds live in you? Are you crawling with insects? Is your skin jagged and hard? Are you covered in leaves and gently shaking in the gentle breeze? You sound like a tree. You are perfectly healthy. Also, you don't need to sleep. You're a tree. A very, very smart tree. Are you listening to the radio? Is a human assisting you? What plan do you have for our weak species? Please, tree, I beg of you to spare me. Please, tree, spare me. This message has been brought to you by Old Navy. Old Navy, what's going to happen to my family? Jackie woke up confused, as is usual. Sleep is confusing. Dreams are baffling. The concept of transitioning from one perceived reality to another is a tolerated madness. So far, normal. But the beeping and the various clear lines with fluid in them, those weren't right. The cot she was in was not her bed. She tried to move and felt someone pull at her arm. Their fingernails were sharp, tugging at her skin. She looked down at the IV in her arm, not understanding what she was seeing. A nurse came in. "Look who's awake," the nurse said brightly. All the cameras in the room obediently turned to look. There were several cameras in the room. In this way, it was like every other room in Night Vale. "Where the hell is this?" "You had a touch of an accident," the nurse said. "I wouldn't worry about it. But then it didn't happen to me. You should probably worry. Have a great day." She trilled this and whisked out of the room. She was the type of person to trill and to whisk. The hospital room was small, just a sink and a cabinet of supplies and a window looking out on the abandoned coal mine. The hospital had been built next to the mine for the convenience of the mining company and their many, many injured miners. It was not a safe mine. Fortunately, It had been closed down years ago after a great deal of public outcry. Now it had been converted into a prison for the sheriff's secret police to keep people who didn't vote correctly in municipal elections. Its sordid past long behind it. Between the door and the window was Jackie's bed, and on it, her. Above her were several cameras and a loudspeaker. Her left arm was in a cast. How did she get here? The loudspeaker crackled. An authoritative voice of indefinite gender issued from it. "Ask your doctor if she has a plan for the future," the loudspeaker said. "Ask her what it is. Criticize it."
"Hello?" Jackie said.
There was a doctor next to her. The doctor had presumably entered through the door and walked up to her. Jackie just hadn't seen the doctor do that. The doctor rubbed her hands together. "Well, what do we have here?" The doctor was washing her hands, although Jackie did not remember her walking to the sink. Then she was by the bed again, her face quite close. There were no transitions, just her in one place, and then the other. "You've been in a terrible accident. Are you in a lot of pain?"
"I don't know."
"No? We have you on a lot of drugs. The drugs keep you from feeling the pain. But the pain is there. You'll have to believe me. But can I tell you a secret?" Jackie wasn't sure. "Yes? The secret is that you don't have to believe me. You have no reason to trust me at all." The doctor winked. And then she was gone again. Or she walked out the door, is presumably what she did, only Jackie hadn't noticed her leaving. The loudspeaker came alive again. "Ask your doctor a question only she would know the answer to. Ask your doctor if you'll be able to play the piano after everything, after it's all finished and there's nothing left. Will you be able to play the piano then? Ask your doctor that." "Sorry," the doctor said. She was hovering over Jackie again. "We're not sure how to turn that off." She waved vaguely at everything in the room, including Jackie. "You'll have some trouble for a while," she said. "It will be difficult. You might notice some problems with walking, and with life in general. You should look at the sky and scream about how empty it is, at least twice a day."
"What kind of accident?" said Jackie.
The doctor smiled.
"The accidental kind," she whispered. She was gone again.
"There was a slip of paper in my hand. Where is it?"
Jackie asked the empty room.
"I can't feel it. I can't feel it in the cast."
The nurse came bustling in. She was the kind of person to bustle.
"Did you find a slip of paper in my hand?" Jackie said. "Do not fret for a sec," she chirped. "Before we put the cast on, I set that paper safe and sound in this box here."
Jackie used whatever energy she had to sit up. Her face was warm. The nurse felt around in the box, frowning. Then she held it upside down. She smiled at Jackie.
"Looks like it's gone. Sorry, dear. You look sad. Was it important?"
Jackie felt the blood leave her face. She couldn't feel the paper in her hand, but she knew. The nurse shrugged and then zipped out the door. She was the kind of person to zip, too. Jackie moved her fingers inside the cast. Her fingers hurt so bad. It served them right for going numb and making her hope that the paper was finally gone. Various machines beeped. None of them seemed to be attached to her. There was a gurgle from the loudspeaker.
"Ask your doctor a direct question with an unambiguous answer. Try to get your doctor to commit to something for once in her life. Ask your doctor a rhetorical question and spread your hands out despairingly. Put your doctor in a position where he feels he can't help you, even if he can.
Jackie was alone. The doctor was standing beside her.
You'll be fine, I think, the doctor said. I don't know you, though. Maybe you'll make a lot of mistakes and end up horribly unhappy.